Welcome to ID the Future. This is Sarah Chaffee at the Center for Science and Culture. If you're new to intelligent design, ID the Future series ID Inquiry is the place to start. Each year, ID the Future has over 500,000 downloads, and Evolution News and Views receives over a million unique visitors. And our visitors bring many questions. In this podcast series, ID Inquiry, various scientists and scholars will briefly answer these queries and explain the basics of intelligent design. If you have a question you'd like answered, send it to editor@evolutionnews.org. Today we have with us on the show Dr. Robert Marks to discuss the concept of information and how it relates to intelligent design. Dr. Marks is Distinguished Professor of Engineering at the Department of Engineering at Baylor University. He asked me to mention that his opinions do not necessarily represent the views of and have not been reviewed or approved by Baylor. Dr. Marks's professional awards include a NASA Tech Brief Award and a Best Paper Award from the American Brachytherapy Society for Prostate Cancer Research. He is a fellow of both the IEEE and the Optical Society of America. His consulting activities include Microsoft Corporation, DARPA, Boeing Computer Services, and his research has been funded by organizations such as the National Science Foundation, General Electric, Southern California Edison, the Air Force Office of Scientific Research, the Office of Naval Research, the United States Naval Research Laboratory, the Whitaker Foundation, Boeing Defense, the National Institutes of Health, the Jet Propulsion Lab, Army Research Office, and NASA. Dr. Marks is the author of several books, including the Handbook of Fourier Analysis and Its Applications, published by Oxford University Press, and the Introduction to Shannon Sampling and Interpolation series by Springer Verlag. He also authored, with Russ Reed, Neural Smithing, Supervised Learning in Feed-Forward Artificial Neural Networks. Along with Behe, Dembski, Gordon, and Sanford, Marks is the author of Biological Information, New Perspectives, published by Cornell University. Marks, together with William Dembski, founded the Evolutionary Informatics Lab, which focuses on the role of information in the modeling and analysis of evolutionary processes and related phenomena. Dr. Marks, thank you for being on the show with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for asking me, Sarah.
Well, to start off our conversation on the concept of information, would you tell us what information is?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Let me give you a little bit of a history and perspective, first of all. It turns out that science has made great advances in the study of things such as matter, energy, space, and time. But there is also clearly information resident in the universe. And unlike matter and space and energy and time, this idea of information really has not been studied very much. We hear the term information used extensively throughout science and other conversations, but many times you don't come down to actually defining it. And the definition is so important before you start in a discussion about information theory. Let me give you some examples. Astrophysicists ask if black holes destroy information. This information, though, the information destroyed by black holes, is different from the meaningful information, say, that a kid has in its eyes when they recognize their mother. It's a very different type of information. And a number of questions arise about information. This will help sharpen the perspective of information. We're all familiar with Blu-ray discs, kind of the DVDs. A Blu-ray disc is capable of storing about 50 gigabytes of information. And here's the question, is the amount of information on the disc different if the disc contains the movie Braveheart or a collection of random noise? Another question, when a book is shredded, if you take a book and you shred it, that book contains information, are you destroying information? And does it matter if there's another copy of the book? In a similar way, when you take out your cell phone and take a picture of your 8 million by 8 million pixel image, are you creating information? Are you capturing information? What's the deal there? If you look at a document written in Mandarin in Chinese, does the document contain information even if you don't know Mandarin? What if the document is written in, not in Mandarin, but in some alien language unknowable to man? And if you there say that there is no information, does the document all of a sudden generate information if you discover a Rosetta Stone to translate it? Now, you can see these are very confusing questions about information. And They're not only in conflict, but in some cases, they're not answerable because we haven't come up with a definition for information. So when you hear somebody talking about information, you have to define what it means. Nevertheless, there are some universal properties of information we can all agree on. Information can be written, for example, on energy. Like, Sarah, you and I now are communicating a couple of ways. We're communicating with information being encoded on audio transmission, that's sound waves, and also probably between my phone here and your phone there, we have a lot of information being encoded on electromagnetic waves. Electromagnetic waves also encode things like Wi-Fi and your cell phones. So energy is a place where you can put information. But you can also put information in a book. And books are not energy. You actually are writing on matter. So information could be written in books. It can be transmitted electronically using energy. But information itself is neither matter nor energy. Norbert Wiener, who was one of the founders of cybernetics in the middle 20th century, said, information is information, neither matter nor energy. So it's something which is separate from all of these physical accounts. So in our study of the universe thus far, the study of space, time, energy, and matter does not include the study of information. It's been an ignored area. So this leads to the next question, how do you define information? As you can see from the questions I've just answered, there is no theory of everything for information. Physicists are always looking for a theory of everything, which will unify all of physics under one single theory. There is no such thing yet for information. When most people talk about information, they're referring to so-called Shannon information. This is the most popular model of Shannon information. And the inventor of this, Claude Shannon, was a genius, just incredible. And he has probably in the 20th century the most significant master's thesis, where he actually took for the first time and applied Boolean algebra to switching networks. And we do that all the time today. And today's logic circuits, for example, are based on some of Shannon's work. Later, Shannon went to work for Bell Labs, who at the time held a monopoly on telephones, and they were interested in figuring out better ways to communicate over telephone channels. And they were interested in hiring a bunch of top people to figure out how to do that. Shannon was one of them. He published a paper that established Shannon information theory for communications in 1948, and it was a beautifully written paper. In fact, I teach a graduate course here at Baylor, Introduction to Information Theory, and usually a half or two-thirds of the class of the semester is dedicated to teaching the material in Shannon's original 1948 paper. So it was really an incredible, complete piece. Shannon's beautiful information model is to the overall theory of information, though, as Chemistry 101 is to quantum chemistry. Shannon's work is an important contribution, but is only a component of a much larger area of information theory. A big limitation of Shannon's information theory is the inability to measure meaning. If you have a Blu-ray disc containing Braveheart and another Blu-ray disc containing Random Noise, they both can contain the same amount of information as measured by Shannon's bits. Shannon, by the way, was the first to use the term bit in his 1948 paper. We've all heard of bits and bytes, which are a byte is 8 bits long. So he did a lot of revolutionary stuff. He also introduced in his theory in this 1948 paper of a way of communicating over noisy channels, but be able to communicate without error. And it wasn't until 48 years later that somebody figured out how to do it. Shannon showed you could do it, but it was later that somebody did do it. It was, I believe, in 1992, something called TurboCodes. And today we use that technology. If you have a cell phone and you're using G4 or G5 sort of communication, they use Shannon's theory. So Shannon's theory doesn't cover everything, but it is beautiful, and it's a door to information theory. A second theory of information was discovered independently by three guys, Kolmogorov, Chaitin, and Solomonov.
Can I just interject here for a second? Just to clarify really quickly, So Shannon's theory of information is measuring complexity according to bits, correct?
Yes. In fact, Shannon was the first to, in his 1948 paper, offer the bit as a way to measure information. And so most people think of information, they think of information measured in bits, whether it be the number of bits or bytes in an image, or the number of bits or bytes which are storable on a CD or Blu-ray.
Okay.
But Shannon's theory of information, like I said, was a door. There are other theories of information. The second theory of information was by the three guys that I mentioned, Kolmogorov, Chaitin, and Solomonov, and it's often called algorithmic information theory. And the basic idea here is something that I think that ID proponents can identify with. Let me illustrate. Consider the task of giving detailed instructions allowing construction of two objects using a 3D printer. The two objects are a bowling ball and a bust of Abraham Lincoln. The description of the bowling ball will be much, much shorter than the instructions to generate a bust of Lincoln. Lincoln's bust would require details about his beard, his head shape, and if you remember, Lincoln had a little mole-shaped bump on his right cheek, and so we would have to describe that. The bowling ball, on the other hand, is defined only by the radius of the sphere and the description of the three holes of the fingers. By taking longer to describe, Lincoln's bust displays more informational complexity than a bowling ball. So, algorithmically, informational complexity is as much a property of an object as is its mass. So this, I believe, is the portal from which we can look at information in the universe, at least from this algorithmic information perspective. The simple idea of measuring the information content of an object leads to astonishing results. You can prove, for example, there are lists of numbers so large they can't be computed. You can prove that there are things that exist that are unknowable. I mean, think of actually proving something that exists and then proving that even though it exists, you can't know it. That's one of the things algorithmic information theory does. And I tell you, compared to algorithmic information theory, all the science fiction I read as a teenager is kind of boring because these things are actually real. But algorithmic information theory, just like Shannon theory, fails to measure meaning. A large moon rock with finely structured indentations and bumps can require as long as a description as a bust of Lincoln. Yet clearly, the bust of Lincoln has more meaning than the moon rock with all its bumps and crevices and such. Nevertheless, even though we have these two popular theories of evolution, the Shannon and the Kolmogorov theories of information, neither one is capable of measuring the meaning of the object which is looked at. But meaning can be measured, and it can be measured in bits. And the very first that I'm aware of to propose such a measure was Discovery fellow William Dembski. And Bill is also a co-founder of the Evolutionary Informatics Lab, I think, as you mentioned. Meaningful information has also been picked up by a few other places, most notably by a guy named Paul Vitanya at the University of Amsterdam. He's a really smart guy, and Paul is also co-author of the definitive text on algorithmic information theory. But back to William Dembski. Bill proposed specified complexity as a measure of meaningful information. Not only does an object need to be complex, like a moon rock or a bust of Lincoln, but must resonate in context with the experience of the observer. This is key. A page written in Chinese will have little information for me, since I don't read Chinese. If I showed you a picture of my family, it would have more meaning for me than it would for you. Why is that? You would recognize that there's people, but I have a richer context. I would look at the picture and I'd say, there's my wife, Monica, my three grandkids, Tristan, Merrick, and Melody. And so that has more meaning for me because I have a richer context that yields more specified complexity. Another member of the Evolutionary Informatics Lab, Winston Ewart, has expanded on some of Bill's ideas. Winston, Bill, and I just published a sequence of peer-reviewed papers where meaningful information is measured in bits for images, and we also treated the Saylor automata algorithm called the game of life. It's kind of this little game which is played on a big grid that has a big following of nerds and is really fascinating to watch. The papers are on our website, evoinfo.org, for those that are more interested, evoinfo.org, and there are also some videos. And I think this is pretty exciting work, but there's lots of work that needs to be done yet. Then there's the question of the importance of information to ID. I think one of the big things is questioning, where does meaningful information come from? Mathematics conclusively shows that our universe does not contain the probabilistic resources to account for even simple generation of algorithmic specified complexity. One can say the universe is big enough so almost everything can happen. No, it isn't. It turns out that it isn't bigger. In fact, Bill Dembski and I addressed that in our first paper concerning the probabilistic resources of the universe, as has Bill in some of his previous work. And then people come along and they say, well, what about the multiverse? You know, there's 10 to the 100th to 10 to the 1,000th different parallel universes. Certainly, we would have the probabilistic resources then. And the answer is a resounding no. And again, we see that random chance, which is undirected, cannot create meaningful information. So randomness does not create specified information. But here is something which I think is even a little bit more exciting. Computers cannot create meaningful information. This is a field which was pioneered by, at least from my knowledge, by Roger Penrose. Roger Penrose, some might know, was the co-author with Stephen Hawking of one of the first papers on black holes. He wrote a couple of books. They were Shadows of the Mind and The Emperor's New Mind, where he makes the case that the creativity that humans have, both in science and in the arts, is something which cannot be done by a computer. Computers do have, I am convinced, the inability to create information. Part of that is by our lab's examination of a number of the evolutionary programs which biologists have put forth to demonstrate Darwinian evolution. We have examined a number of these, and we can see that the only reason that they succeeded is because of the creativity of the programmer. The programmer placed the information into the program which allowed it to succeed. It wasn't the program. It wasn't the evolutionary process. It was actually something which was placed in there by the program. And this is very consistent with the conclusions of Penrose and others, that a specified complexity cannot be created by a computer. However, the human brain can be creative. And Penrose talks about a number of cases, especially in science, where people like Gauss came and he said, you know, I had this inspiration. I don't know where it came from, but it just appeared to me last night and boom, he had his solution. The U.S. Patent Office used to require a so-called flash of genius before they would allow anything to be patented. So the idea is that there is this flash of genius, creativity, that can occur in humans that can't occur in computers. Another example is in the arts. The Beatles, Paul McCartney wrote the melody to Yesterday, and he said, man, I don't believe I wrote this beautiful melody. And so he was really skeptical, and he went around and played it for a bunch of people, and they said, no, we've never heard this melody before. We hear similar situations from Bob Dylan and other great creators in the arts. So the conclusion is that there remains a lot of work to be done in algorithmic information theory and understanding this concept of creativity. And if in our sphere, the human mind is the only way that creativity and specified complexity can be developed, then it stands to reason that in the creation of the universe, that there must be an intelligence behind that. And that, in a nutshell, is the importance of information theory to intelligent design, especially in the measuring of meaning associated with information.
I like your term, that flash of genius that's needed.
Yes. In fact, there was a movie about that called Flash of Genius. It was about the guy that discovered and invented the intermediate windshield wiper, and his flash of genius came from looking at the way that people blinked. And a true story, the guy patented it, and the big automakers attempted to steal it. And the name of the movie I'd recommend it is called A Flash of Genius, and how this guy has spent the rest of his life trying to sue the big lawyers at some of the big auto companies, and eventually he won. But we see this over and over again, people saying, I don't understand where this came from. I don't understand where this creativity came from. And the human mind can do it. Computers can't. And randomness can't. So I think that that's where information theory is going right now, especially in the area of algorithmic information theory, and Bill's original idea of specified complexity, which now we've quantified. Our papers on evoinfo.org actually look at the game of life, and we measure the amount of specified complexity, not in a hand-waving way, but it's measured in actual bits. The same thing with images. When you look at an image in the presence of certain context, how much meaningful information does it have in bits? We also have theories that showed that the creation by randomness of algorithmic specified complexity of even a moderate degree is just negligibly improbable.
Great. I would like to just finish up by talking on Discovery Institute's new video, the Information Enigma. This is a new way that we have to present sort of the crucial argument of intelligent design to the general public in maybe a more accessible format than previously.
I think that the Discovery video that I watched was really good in presenting the concept of information. However, one of the challenges is placing that in the perspective of the definition of information. For example, in conferences and such, when I've presented these ideas to people who haven't really studied the field, people come up to me and they said, everybody knows that information theory can't measure meaning. Now, what they're thinking about is that everything is Shannon information. And they're right from that perspective, but they're looking at it through a very narrow lens and actually from a position of ignorance. So I think for a lay audience, the idea of information as presented in the video is just perfect. But I think critics of the idea would say, well, everybody knows that Shannon information can't create meaning. So yes, I think it's great at a very high level. I really enjoyed it.
So Dr. Marks, if we have listeners who might want to learn more about information theory and how we measure information, what resources would you direct them to?
Well, first of all, the website, evoinfo.org, which would be a place where they could go to look at the papers. But the papers are written for nerds, so you got to really know the math and stuff like that. In such a case where people aren't proficient in the mathematics that we deal with, there are a few videos there of some presentations that deal with the information content of our universe. The other things, there are some great books. One of them is Bill Dembski's book, No Free Lunch, which was published quite a long time ago. Since then, we've done a lot of work, and that book, it came out in the second edition, I believe. But what is really interesting, let me pitch our new book. William Dembski, Winston Ewart, and I are writing a book called Evolutionary Informatics. And in that book, which is going to be published by the same one that published the book by Behe and Bill Dembski and Bruce Gordon and John Sanford, they are going to publish our book entitled Evolutionary Informatics. The book is written, it's being typeset as we speak, and hopefully that will come out. And in the book, we did something that Michael Behe did in Darwin's Black Box. In Darwin's Black Box, there's a lot of biochemistry that you could really go to sleep reading. So especially if you're not an expert in biochemistry. So Michael Behe did a very clever thing, I thought. He said, when I get technical, I'm going to put a little box by it so you can skip over it. And that, in fact, is the way that I read Behe's book, because I'm not an expert in biochemistry. And it read very, very smoothly. In a similar fashion, the book that we have coming out, we have taken very careful pains to take all of the mathematics and isolate them by a little mark so that people can read the book at a high level, or if they want to get down and dirty, they can read the sections which are marked and be able to look at the detail. So that should be coming out probably next year, I believe.
This has been ID Inquiry. For more about information theory, visit evoinfo.org and keep an eye out for the book Evolutionary Informatics by Robert Marks, William Dembski, and Winston Ewart, coming out next year. And to our listeners, thank you again for joining us on ID the Future for ID Inquiry. If you have a question about intelligent design, or Darwinian evolution, or about any aspect of the debate between the two theories, please send it to us at editor@evolutionnews.org. That's editor@evolutionnews.org. I'm Sarah Chaffee with ID the Future. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2015. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.